This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports.
We're going to do you on the interview.
Doesn't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Simply Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
All right, hi, good morning, everybody. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710CLSports.com, Seattle Sports app, of course, and all the podcast platforms. There's so much going on. We got opening day just a couple days away. Brian Wu going to the injured list yesterday. We'll talk through what that means. Seahawks news, I believe Mike McDonald speaking today, and John Schneider's going to talk at the league meetings. The league is making changes to the rules. There's like a million things going on. College hoops, obviously, and Caitlin Clark last night. I just wanted to take a moment at the beginning. I don't know about you guys, but if you woke up early this morning, like I know the three of us did, and the first thing you saw was what happened in Baltimore and the harbor this morning. Oh, my gosh. There are certain stories that just kind of, you know, stop you dead in your tracks. And this is one of them, man. The video of that bridge collapsing and how fast it is really, I don't know. There's just something about it that it's horrendous. It's absolutely awful. And you feel, I think it's one of those things that we all drive over so many bridges in our life, right? I mean, you know, I commute every day. I go over the Ship Canal Bridge. I know I'm not alone in that. And there's about 100 other bridges around here that people may commute over just to get to and from work every day. And, you know, I think we've all imagined what would happen, right? How far down is it? What happens if this bridge goes? My mom's terrified of bridges. She like won't get on them if she can avoid it. I mean, obviously you can't avoid a lot of them, but she really hates it. And I guess we've all had that feeling, right? You're driving over the bridge, you kind of look over the side, and you're like, that's a long way down. Like, what if there's an earthquake? What if this? What if that? Right? And then to see how quickly it all happens. I don't know.
Maybe give a little quick little what happened here for anybody who just heard it the first time.
Yeah, sorry about that. If you haven't seen this, the videos are all online. It's a giant container ship that is going through the Baltimore, coming out of the Baltimore port late last night. It's like 3 a.m. Baltimore
1:30
time. 1:30. So thankfully the bridge is not packed or anything like that, but there are people on it. There are cars going across. They are determining whether or not there was a construction crew on the bridge at the time. And something seems to happen to the ship. Maybe it loses power. It's really hard to tell in the video, but it drifts into one of the stanchions. And the whole bridge collapses like instantly. It's truly, it's just shocking to see. So we won't spend the whole show on it. Obviously, as I said, there's a ton of really cool sports topics today. But I don't know. That one just got me, and thought I would just kind of start the show by mentioning it and, you know, wishing the best for everybody who was involved. I know there are cars that are submerged underground, under the water. I was reading that the rescue crews are struggling because the water there is so, the visibility is so bad due to silt in the water. I mean, it's one of the most active ports in the country. And then, you know, once you get past the devastation of today, the devastation will continue for ages because years.
It's almost a 1.6 mile long 4-lane bridge. It's part of the freeway.
Yeah. So even beyond that, that port's not going anywhere for a while.
No.
I mean, they're going to have to dredge all of that, you know, material from the bridge all out of there before they can even operate the port. They move more trucks, cars and light trucks out of that port than any other port in the U.S. I was reading today. And just, you know, the number of jobs that are dependent on it is close to 200,000. It's not like Baltimore was thriving to begin with. And now you're going to add that devastation to the job market. It's incredibly sad. Anyway, I don't want to get too farther into it. But if you do have a moment, go read the story. And I would hope at some point there is something that all of us around the country can do to help the people of Baltimore, because that is going to be a complete, complete mess there. Anyway. All right. We will move on. Sorry to start the day on such a down note. Let's see. I could start on any number of these really cool topics. I guess I'll start with Brian Wu, just because it's such a bummer. So news coming out yesterday afternoon that Brian Wu is going to be shut down. He's not going to pitch today, which was the expectation in his final warm-up start before starting the season. And it's elbow inflammation. All right. So good news, bad news, right? The bad news, it's his elbow. He's had Tommy John surgery. Everyone was already worried about him from an injury standpoint. And let's face it, the Mariners' depth at their starting position, starting pitching spot, is not great. It's not what it's been for the last few years. So the moment you see Brian Wu elbow IL, panic. Totally, totally reasonable to panic over that. The good news, it's not structural. The MRI results were negative, which, of course, in this case is a good thing, right? It's inflammation. Hopefully that's similar to what Matt Brash had a couple of weeks ago, right, where everyone feared the worst, and then they did the MRI, turned out to be inflammation in the elbow, and you say, all right, well, take a little time off, build it back up, and then you'll start throwing again in a week or so. And that's what they're going to do here with Brian Wu. He's going to take 7 to 10 days off, and then he'll start throwing and kind of work his way back up. So my guess is we don't see him pitching before May 1st, probably, maybe a little before then. But I would guess they're going to be ultra careful with him, just as they are with Brash. Young pitchers, right, who've thrown a lot of innings recently, a lot more than they'd ever thrown. And so I would be surprised if we see Brian Wu before May 1st, which, okay, fine. If that's the case and you only miss a month, great. Emerson Hancock should be able to cover you. Frankly, if you're concerned about Hancock, there are options. There are enough days off, especially in the first month of the season, that you could skip the fifth time in the order. And I think you could get to May only throwing the fifth spot three times. I was looking through it. I think it's three.
Wow.
Yeah. So maybe it's four, but it's somewhere in, like, it's not like you would need to throw it every single time. But if you do that, right, you're making it just a little bit harder and taking some of those off days away from Castillo and from all your other young pitchers who could maybe use it, especially Bryce Miller. So, you know, everything comes at a cost. It's just a matter of how you want to do it.
How do you feel about Emerson Hancock? Do you see enough of him this spring?
Yeah, I feel fine with Emerson Hancock. The problem is what's next. The problem isn't Emerson
Hancock.
The insurance
policy is eventually.
It's that, you know, deep. Rewind a couple of years. Right. And look at your high minors, or at the very least minor league pitchers that were close to the big leagues. And it's your major league staff. Right. It was even after Gilbert got there. It was Kirby. It was Wu. It was Miller. It was Brandon Williamson. It was Levi Stout. It was somebody else who I'm missing on. Like, there were all of those guys were sort of together, and you didn't know which of them were going to emerge and how good they'd be. Hancock, throw his name on that list as well. Matt Brash was on the list at that point, right? Because he was a starter. So yeah, there were a lot of guys that, you know, you're sort of like, okay, well, hopefully you don't need all of them, but these guys are getting close and they're highly regarded. The problem you've got right now is that after Emerson Hancock, there is nobody that is highly regarded. Levi Stout is back, but he's not the same pitcher he was, and he's been through some stuff, and they're just trying to get him back on track. You know, you got Austin Voth, you've got, you know, Trent Thornton. But right now, you know, with Brash and with Santos both injured in your pen, you kind of need those guys there. So can you survive this? Yes, of course. And, you know, maybe the beginning of the year is the best time for it. Maybe it's the worst. It's the best because you have the ability with all the off days to skip the spot in the rotation. On the other hand, people aren't like giving away starters right now. Everybody has hope. Everybody thinks that they can make it. No one is looking to trade a starter, certainly not one who's major league ready. So this is where you kind of got to make your money as a Jerry DePoto, Justin Hollander combo. Like, this is, I would think and hope that this is a time to go out there and just find something else. It doesn't need to be, you know, a superstar pitcher. It's got to be somebody that you can, you know, stash potentially in AAA. Not easy to find. But that's why they get paid what they get paid, and we sit here and comment on it. So, challenge. Don't like it. Certainly was crushing when I saw it yesterday. It could obviously be significantly worse, but, man, what...
My stomach dropped immediately.
Right?
It just felt terrible.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, this is... this is the one, like one of the biggest concerns. We're just going through this yesterday, right? The concerns we have about the team. And number one for me all along has been pitching depth, and it's going to be tested right off the bat this year. All right. We're going to talk a lot of baseball today, a lot of football today. The start of the Jeff Passan, or the return of the Jeff Passan show, or whatever we're calling it. Jeff will join us at 8:30 this morning. We'll come right back with everything you need to know next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, unfortunately, this didn't take long. Brian Wu announced yesterday he will start the season on the injured list after experiencing elbow inflammation. The good news, the MRI negative, so no structural damage. It appears to just be inflammation, no torn ligament or anything like that. Apparently felt a little soreness in a throwing session, shut it down immediately. He's not going to throw for at least a week, maybe 10 days, then try to ramp it back up. The bad news, though, look, Wu's got injuries. He's had injuries to that elbow before. He had Tommy John surgery in 2021. He threw more innings than anybody expected him to last season. And so this was always a bit of a concern, and it looks like it's going to raise its head immediately this year. He was also shut down, in August last year and was able to bounce back from that. So hopefully this is just a short-term deal. Emerson Hancock, we always knew he was going to be the next guy up. He's going to take the spot in the rotation. The team will have a bunch of opportunities to skip that spot in April if they want. Hancock will, though, have to start the fifth game of the season against the Guardians. So this is why we spent a lot of time talking about pitching depth, right? Why I was hoping they might have found one more proven starter, even if it's a minor league guy, somebody that they can just have on hand. Maybe there's something else out there in the free agent pool. Certainly Jordan Montgomery's there, but That would be a heck of an investment right now, knowing that you're likely to get your guy back. We'll see. Anyway, they did play last night. Mariners take game one in San Diego, 4-1. Big offensive night for Ty France once again.
Here's the pitch. Swung on, line drive, right field, base hit. It just scoots past Bogarts and Cronenworth. Coming to score is Canzone, and the Mariners tack on another. It's 3-1 M's.
Yeah, that's great news there, because he's been starting to heat up finally here the last couple of days. In fact, a bunch of the guys like Luke Rayleigh, Ty France, who maybe were colder earlier, are starting to heat up. Polanco had a nice night. Canzone hit another triple, and Bryce Miller was pretty good. Tidy 3.2 innings, and he allowed just one run. All right, final preseason, or call it an exhibition game today. A little day start in San Diego. Then they come home, and they'll get ready to be underway for real on Thursday.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, the twists and turns of the Shohei Ohtani story continued yesterday as he spoke to the media, categorically denied having bet on sports or really knowing what was happening.
Until a couple days ago, I didn't know that this was happening. Just to kind of just go over the result, in conclusion, Ipe has been stealing money from my account and has told lies.
Yeah, so he certainly went on the offensive. Here's a little bit more from Shohei via his new translator.
Last weekend in Korea, media has reached out to a representative in my camp inquiring about my potential involvement in this sports betting. Ipe never revealed to me that there was this media inquiry, and to the representatives in my camp, Ipe told to the media and to my representatives that I, on behalf of a friend, paid off debt.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm glad he spoke, and certainly the way he tells the story and how much he went on the offense, right, saying this guy stole from me, etc., he's putting himself in a position where he really has to be telling the truth. That said, he didn't take any questions. There were no follow-up questions yesterday, so we don't really understand yet how Ipe would have gained access to his accounts, and I think those are some really important things for everybody to learn. The IRS, among the agencies investigating, not the only one, I'm sure more information will continue to trickle out. Gaming now so closely connected to sports, so we probably shouldn't be surprised there's another inquiry now as well. This time in the NBA, Raptors forward Jontae Porter's been involved with some suspicious activity. In this case, prop bets were made on the under in three different games where he left due to injuries and illness, causing all of those under bets to win. You may remember the name Jonte Porter. Yes, the brother of Michael Porter Jr. You might remember the sketchiness with how his family all moved here to Seattle, right? Appeared to going to go to the UW, and then his dad took the assistant coaching job at Missouri, and they all fled in the night. So, yeah, not the first time that this family's name has been connected to something at the very least scandalous. We'll follow this one as well.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, the Kraken have finally woken up and decided to call up some of the young kids on their team. Logan Morris and Ryan Winterton both going to make their debuts tonight against Anaheim. Both guys are forwards. Winterton considered to be one of the best in the organization. So excited to see what he's got. Still no Shane Wright. So apparently we're just done with that. He was like, what, the fourth or fifth pick 2 years ago? But yeah, we're just done. We're not going to call up Shane Wright or see what he's got at any point. Yeah, I'm not sure I understand what the heck is going on there, but it doesn't bode well for Shane Wright. Did watch Iowa last night as they beat West Virginia.
And the Iowa Hawkeyes survive a scare in the second round from West Virginia and advance to the Sweet 16. A date with Colorado next weekend for the Hawkeyes and Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, for everybody following Caitlin Clark, she did not have her best game last night again. Kind of beat up. I mean, she's still at 29 points. Let's not get it twisted. And she now has broken the single season scoring record, also set by Kelsey Plum. But yeah, they were physical once again with her, and that's clearly going to be the strategy teams will employ to try to take down Iowa and get her off her game.
I think we use our crowd, but you know, we knew we gave up a 10-0 run to start the quarter, but this team was never flustered, and I think that just speaks to our experience, and couldn't be happier for this group. I mean, we wanted to go out on a high note, our five seniors, these two. It's just really special. I'm just proud of them.
Yeah, just very proud. Cool. Good stuff there. And she is, she's must-watch TV, man. She really is. Certainly in my house, we were watching last night. That's everything you need to know, quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show.
I was trying to follow along all last night. Was working for the Gonzaga Bulldog women. Wouldn't it be Utah?
Yes, they did beat Utah.
Right.
Yes, to advance. Good. And then did you see the Utah coach saying that they were put up for the time in Spokane? They were staying actually in Coeur d'Alene.
Yeah, I was just kind of listening to that.
Kind of an ugly story. She says there were some racist incidents in and around where they were staying involving the players. So, yeah, I'm sure more will come out on that one as well. All right. As I said, we got a little of everything today. I want to play you the Joel Klatt from yesterday, not just because he was, again, ruthlessly mean to me. I don't know what this guy's deal is. This Klatt dude is out of control.
Maura, did you set it up? Is this all Maura? Can you be mad at Maura for this?
Yes. I can't believe you tried to blame me when Brock totally admitted that he texted him beforehand.
This guy just comes on and just takes shots left and right, and he's just rabbit punching me.
You got your moment when he talked all about a nickel player they could draft, and you were like,
that
what about Devin
cool.
Witherspoon? Did you watch the Seahawks?
I did have a little strike back action. Plus, I think what you'll find is that the very end of this interview felt very vindicating for me, given the way the last couple of months have gone. In any event, stick around. Joel was awesome yesterday, and there's a ton to react to. So hear the interview next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekday 6 to 10
on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Fun time of year with opening day now just 3 days away. Of course, you got the tournaments going on and men's and women's college basketball. And we're not that far from the draft either, Brock. Just about a month away from the NFL draft. So what a great time to chat with our friend Joel Klatt from Fox Sports. Joel joining us now. Good morning, Joel. How are you?
Good. Are you are you with us today? We're gonna have another difficult conversation. Is everything gonna be all right?
Maura, you set him up for this, didn't you? This is, you know, I was saying that you were a little mean to me, I thought, the last time, and it took me some time to recover, obviously, from how badly you beat me up here on the radio. But
Brock and I texted about this.
Yeah.
And he felt bad for you. I didn't. So I thought there was an appropriate amount of, you know, animus towards some of the things that you were saying. But
see,
overall,
he and Brock texted.
Really,
you're
well.
Blaming me.
Yeah. Well, I blame you and Brock. You're like a team out to get me, basically. You know, Joel, after we talked, I went and did the research that you wanted me to do.
I'm sure you did.
I was just... was just being honest. You asked me if I had seen that game, and obviously I had not. And so I did the research, and then I kind of started to fall in love with J.J. McCarthy. And now I'm kind of mad at all of you guys for ever making me even think about this guy, because there's no chance the Seahawks are going to be able to get him.
Got it. So you and my 12-year-old could have a nice little outdoor lab blaming everybody else for your own inefficiency.
Yes, that's exactly fine. Right. Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Listen, all joking aside, I think that it was very easy for all of us who watched or covered the sport to kind of put JJ specifically into a bit of a box because of the way that Michigan wanted to play. And they wanted to play that way, and they did play the way that they did, not because of JJ and his skill set, but in spite of that. And he could have been a guy that threw for 3,500, 4,000 yards. He's got that type of ability. They had a wide receiver that could have been an 85, 90 catch guy and gone for over 1,000 yards in Roman Wilson. They've got a tight end in Colston Loveland that could have been, you know, a 50, 65 catch type of guy. But that's not the way that they wanted to play because their philosophy was different than that. They wanted to play with extra tight ends and extra linemen and create extra gaps and control the game so that they could play a complementary style. They have great special teams, they have great defense, and they wanted to make sure that they were getting the best out of every unit. Because of that, JJ wasn't asked to do what other guys were asked to do. That doesn't mean he can't do it. It just means that it has to be a little bit more of a projection. Mm-hmm. I think the more that I go through, you know, this process, the more I'm convinced that we're going to have four quarterbacks taken in the first five picks, that JJ is going to get selected most likely by Minnesota. And I believe will trade with either Arizona or someone up there at the top to go and get him.
Yeah, that certainly is where some of the momentum is going. So, Joel, one of the advantages...
Just real quick, do you think that he'll be as good as he may be?
Man,
do you think he's
now
worth
you're
that?
Just like my 12-year-old, interrupting other people. This is incredible.
Great.
No, go ahead. You took the floor, please.
Do you think he's worth that?
I do. I think that his top-end potential is there. I think what people are really starting to love is if you put on, and this is where the benefit of like a cut up happens. If you just put on his third and long tape, just third and long, you get this very different picture of what he is rather than just watching base down. You know, on base down, you're going to see him hand off duo like 8 million times in a row. That's a run concept, by the way, Saul. And you know, on third and long, though, you see him reading the field, creating with his legs, making tight window throws. And you're like, man, is this the same guy? And that's the momentum that you're seeing as you dive deeper and you get into cutups and you see him in 2-minute situations. You see him in the red zone. You see him on third and long. That's when the NFL scouts are sitting there and those front offices are saying to themselves, yeah, this guy absolutely is worth a pick up there at the top.
Which is why the Seahawks went out and did what they did. And knowing that JJ was not going to be in their plans and went out and traded for Sam Howell. And I want to ask you about him in just a second. But before I do, you saw Michigan how many times last year?
I don't know about, last year I think it was 7. But I do know over the last 3 years, so since COVID, it was 16 games that I've done of theirs.
Okay, so you know this roster inside and out. You and Gus. By the way, we had Gus on a couple of weeks ago, Joel.
Oh, yeah.
How was Gus?
Well.
He was really nice to Salt.
I might have gotten you in trouble.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I might have gotten my revenge because I asked him about Scotty.
Yeah, he didn't like that. He did not like
it. I was like, yeah, Joel told us about Scotty, and he was like, well, he did? I'm going to punch him in the face. Like, he's pretty mad at you, it sounded like. So I'm not really going to apologize because I was really just getting back at you for how mean you were to me the last time you were on.
Right.
But he was not psyched that you told us his secrets about
that's
Scotty.
Fine, but let's just say beyond that, you know, what did he say? Seattle was his girlfriend or something, his lover?
He called his baby girl.
Yeah, Seattle's baby. Joel, it was a far-ranging
powerhouse interview, I got to tell you.
Baby girl, Seattle, I miss you, baby, and I'm going to get back to see you as soon as I can.
Yeah.
There he is. Oh, man. I love that.
He was in full form. So
I love it.
Yep. He was an absolute blast. But he knows Michigan's roster from a certain level. You know them inside and out because you have seen them so many times. The Seahawks, Mike McDonald, is a former Raven, have not brought one Raven in. And I said to Salk in our little Blue 88 segment last hour, I'd be shocked if we don't see a Wolverine or two that's drafted or brought in here because of Jay Harbaugh, because of all the familiarity, because this staff knows their guys inside and out. Who would be a few of the Michigan Wolverines, if JJ's off the table, that you would say, oh, yeah, for Mike McDonald, for John Schneider, for all new coaching staff, for Ryan Grubb, first-time NFL coordinator? Yep, these are a couple Wolverines that you have to have on your roster.
Well, I would look towards the defensive side, and I would look towards a guy that Mike knew really well and saw blossom into what I would consider to be the best defender on the best defense in college football a year ago, which is Mikey Sainristil. I thought he was the best nickelback in the country. And that defense, so when Mike first got the job at Michigan, I was fortunate enough to have like some really long meetings with him, which was weird. As you know, Brock, like I thought one thing about Michigan and Jim Harbaugh and their meetings, and they were always really short and almost contentious at times before COVID. I'm not joking. After COVID, though, it just flipped. It totally changed. It was wild. We got all sorts of access, and guys would sit there, and there was no time limits. I sat with Mike McDonald the first time I ever sat with him for over an hour on a Friday. On a Friday! It was wild, and we talked about philosophy, and we talked about the way that he wanted to build this defense and what Jim Harbaugh had in mind and what he was instructed to do as the coordinator for the Wolverines. And he talked about the philosophy, and in its simplest form, obviously there's a lot more to this, but in its simplest form, he talked about building a run wall with the interior of the defensive line, building very hard edges on the edge of the defensive line. So think of Aiden Hutchinson at that point. They were going to cater to a guy like Hutchinson. It just so happened that they have this David Ajabo that kind of comes on as well, and they've got these two hard edges for Mike McDonald. And then he talked about having hybrid players in the middle of the field and lockdown corners. And when he talked about hybrid players, he talked about nickel and linebackers as guys that have to do everything really well, whether it's cover or stop the run. They just have to be great football players in the middle of the field because they've got to be able to stay on the field regardless of personnel, regardless of situation. Can't be shuttling in and out specialists on defense. Generally speaking, got to have a core group of guys out there that can play and match up with all sorts of different situations and personnel groups. And Mikey Sainristil is a guy that was a wide receiver, switched over to nickelback, and I thought he became, in the last 2 years, their best defender. I'm really high on him, loved him as a person, and because of that philosophy and needing those hybrid-style players, I think that Sainristil would be an interesting pick.
Do you think that is more collegial, where there is so much more up-tempo, where the field is a little bigger, where that middle of the field stretches, or do you think that plays into what he wants to do professionally too?
Well, I think it's still professionally because that what Jim wanted was what the Baltimore Ravens was doing. He came in and said, hey, John, I need your defense. Give me two guys that can run it because of all of these things. Mm-hmm. And I do think that you have more time because of the huddle to match up. But that being said, even when I watch the NFL game, if in college you're in nickel 85% of the time, and I think you would agree with that on defense, yep. I think in the NFL it's still north of 65% of the time.
Yep.
So that's more, the nickel back, if you will, has become more of a, quote, base defender than, the Will or Sam linebacker in a lot of cases. So, from my standpoint, I think that Sainristil holds a ton of value, even at the next level, and his ability to disrupt the game and impact the game, I think, is really strong. Well, here's a comparison, and I don't want to directly compare him to these players, but in the same vein of these guys that are creative impact players on the defensive outside of the structure of their own defense. Sainra still had a mini version, JV version of kind of like an Ed Reed style impact, because he could do everything on the field, and depending on the situation and the offensive formation and concept, his instincts would take over, and he was always around the ball. That's something that Jesse Minner and I talked a lot about this last year at Michigan, and I think that's something that Mike McDonald would appreciate if he was in Seattle.
It will be interesting because they got a pretty good nickel. I mean, the best football player last year on the Seahawks defense was their first-round pick. And everything that you just said about Sainra still, to me, is Devin Witherspoon. And, you know, but maybe Devin is that lockdown corner.
That's a good point.
I mean, maybe Devin
even thought about that.
Well, but maybe they say, hold on a second.
I feel like a sulk because I wasn't really.
You know, I wasn't going to say anything about that, Joel, but as you were talking, was thinking was,
go ahead.
You mean like Devin Witherspoon? Because I feel like I kind of got that. I mean, you know, did you watch the Seahawks play last year?
Yeah, I did. I mean, not at length, certainly.
No, I'm sorry. You missed out.
I will tell you, there's some other players, too. You know who else would fit in that? And that would be interesting on your opinion on this, Brock, is Junior Colson, the linebacker. I think that he would be interesting.
I've heard his name a lot.
Yes.
A lot of people have kind of mentioned him as a potential. Is he gone by the time like the second round comes? Like where does, I've seen people say first round, third round, second round. Where do you think
he's
he goes?
I don't think he's a first round player. I think that in the back end of the second round, I think he would probably be there. Maybe early in the third round, depending on, because remember, what we don't know is how quickly all those wide receivers are going to come off the board. That's a lot of slots that they're going to take up. So we'll see how that happens. And if that happens, what you're going to see is other position groups get shoved down the board and later into the draft.
Yeah. So at that draft in a little bit over a month, you're going to be sitting up there with Daniel Jeremiah, great buddy of ours, great guy, Rich Eisen as well. And Rich was on the show last week. And I'm very curious now where you're falling. If QBs go four out of the first five, Daniel Jeremiah's last mock had a certain southpaw from Montlake going right there, 12, 13 to the Raiders. Are you feeling a Michael Penix is going to be drafted in the first round kind of vibe now?
Yeah, I do. I really do. More I talk with people, and this is a guy that I've really loved, even back, you know, before the season. You know, I think I categorized him as my dark horse Heisman even before the year in August. Here's what I love about Michael Penix. What I love about Michael Penix is that this guy is like, he's like a card counter in Vegas. In the sense that he is constant in a position to play with the odds in their favor with his, not just accuracy, but also pitch selection. The way that he puts pace and tempo or layers the football down the field and then always seems to put the ball on the opposite side of the defender. So when I watch the film, I'm seeing Polk and McMillan and Adunze, and they're always adjusting and making great catches. I'm not saying, especially Adunze, but they're always in a position where the defender can't quite get to the ball because of Penix's ability to throw the ball with leverage. And I even shudder at saying throw the ball. He passes the football. There are guys that are great throwers of the football, and it's beautiful. And it's beautiful, and they can be successful as quarterbacks. But Michael Penix is a great passer of the football. And when you pass the ball, you always throw away from the defense and with great leverage. I can't get Miami out of my mind. Like, I just think he would fit so perfectly in Miami. They could get away from all of the RPO stuff that they have to do to fit Tua, and they could really leverage the defense down the field and play on top of the defense, which would open up their run game. It would open up the deep end cuts, which if you have speed like Tyreek Hill, that's the route that actually does business. Yes, it's great to go over the top and create big plays and explosives, but if you need a first down, if you need to get to the sticks, what you need is vertical stretch in the defense so that you can in cut at the chains. That style of offense, I think, would actually work better for Miami than what they were doing this year with Tua, I can't get Miami out of my mind for Penix. I think he would be so perfect there.
Talking to Joel Klatt here on Brock and Salk. So if you were in the Seahawks shoes and you've got Geno Smith back for at least one more year, and we'll see after that, you just traded for Sam Howell. How are you handling that? What do you make of Howell and his potential long term to maybe unseat Geno?
You know, at some point you got to close your eyes and picture the confetti falling and think to yourself, like, is that the type of guy that I could see, you know, with a Lombardi trophy in his right hand? And unfortunately, I just don't see that with Sam Howell. That doesn't mean he can't be a good NFL starter, but you know, are we just trying to be wild cards here, or are we trying to go and actually like win a Super Bowl? I know that that's a high bar and that seems critical, but you know, Sam Howell is a fine NFL player. I just, if he's your quarterback, I don't think you're trying to win the Super Bowl.
Do you feel that way with Geno?
Yes, exactly. Verbatim.
Yeah, so kind of the same
Seahawks
thing.
The Seahawks are not a Super Bowl contender right now. They're just not. And because they don't have the requisite quarterback play to do that. They just don't. And it's one thing you could say, like, well, Joel Russell wasn't that when they won the Super Bowl. And to some extent, yes, that's true. But also, think of how cheap Russell was and the roster that they had around him. Think of how dominant the Denver defense was in Super Bowl 50 and the roster they had around an aging Peyton Manning, okay? Seattle doesn't have that right now. They don't have the roster around an average quarterback to say to themselves, yeah, absolutely, we can go and compete with San Francisco. You're not even the best team in your own division right now. So at that, like, no, these quarterbacks are not the answer. They are placeholders. And until that is fixed or the roster is completely overhauled to be a roster that can compete with San Francisco toe-to-toe, then, you know, then they're just playing out the string.
Well, so I totally agree with that, by the way, which is
whoa.
Yeah, no,
whoa.
You and I are very much on the same page with this, but
dangerous.
What do you do then? Because with the 16th pick and no second rounder and now only one third rounder because of the trade for Sam Howell, they're not going to be in the market for any of those five quarterbacks that you mentioned. What do you, and by all accounts, next year doesn't sound like that's the class for it. What do you do if you're John? Are you desperate enough to try to just mortgage the future to try to get one of the quarterbacks this year? Do you wait? What do you do?
Only if you feel like you have a roster that is just a quarterback away. If you don't feel like that, then you need to start tearing pieces down. That's the only two ways to go about it. You either have it or you don't. And there's two things that prevent teams from ever going into one of those two categories. And the first, at least in my estimation, would be the purgatory of the NFL, which they're in the middle of the first round. If you are just an average NFL team, it's created to be 8-8. If you are 8-8, you're screwed because you don't have a pick to actually get better. And you're just in this spot where you're like, well, are we a piece away? Could we do this? Could we leverage for that guy? You know, and so I call it the purgatory of the NFL if you're sitting there right in the middle. And then the other aspect of this is that the life cycle of coaching staffs is so fast that none of them want to sit there and say, like, okay, well, we'll be here in 6 years, so let's start tearing it down. It's like, do you really want to do that if you're a coaching staff? Probably not. So I don't have a great answer for what Seattle should do.
Well, it sounds like
I can tell you this, though.
You might be interested.
I can tell you this. Chicago is in a position where they are going to be really good really soon. You look at the pieces that they had this last year and now what they will have next year, and it's really easy to see them being a team that is improving and has a future that has a trajectory towards the top end of the NFL.
You might be interested in my pet theory, which is the trade DK Metcalf theory, that if you are trying to do what you just said, the one player on this roster who's got some real significant value in a teardown situation like that is DK. And you're spending a lot of money on what might be the best wide receiving core in the league, but without the rest of the roster around them to help.
Okay, here's another one, and Brock might scream at me. There has not been a Super Bowl champion that has won the Super Bowl because their best offensive player is a wide receiver.
Yeah, it's never happened.
That has never happened. So this idea that all these wide receivers hold their organizations hostage for massive contracts, it blows my mind. It blows my mind.
Well, they you're just blowing Salk's mind. You know, we got to go. Joel, we got to go. You're blowing his mind.
They are the most dependent position on the field, Brock. The most dependent position on the field.
Get him, Joel.
They
get after him.
They can't do anything unless everybody else does their job.
Thank you.
I can't stand it.
Thank you.
Great. You've got DK Metcalf. Good for you.
Thank you. Thank you, Joel, you're invited back. Yes, I feel like we've redeemed ourselves now. I feel like you and I are now back on the same page.
Well, we'll see. We'll see the next time I see Gus.
I know.
And then
yeah.
Maybe not.
Here
maybe
you
not,
go.
Sulk.
Here's what Gus said.
Well, you know what? Joel Klatt, I'm going to punch him in the mouth because he's giving away my secret.
So, yeah, this may end up breaking us up when it's all said and done. Because maybe it'll break up you and Gus. Yeah.
Well, let's be fair. You didn't just say, hey, what about this guy, Scotty? You're like, I understand. Scotty's your hype man. I understand he's the one that gets you going in that booth. Yeah. And yeah, that's where you kind of cross the line. So,
well, I expect nothing else from Salt. He's like a 12-year-old with a microphone.
I've got a 12-year-old. Maybe my 12-year-old will have to meet your 12-year-old at some point. They sound kind of different. But
thank you, Joel.
Please,
girl.
God, no.
Bye, Joel. Thank you. As always, later. There's Joel Klatt. Yeah, I don't know why he had to take shots at my 12-year-old. I mean, it's one thing to take shots at me.
Yeah, little does he know that Avery's, like, so mature.
She's the opposite of me. Like, he'd probably
She's
get along great with
you,
Avery.
Like, Dad, get it together.
Dad, follow the rules. What's the matter with you? All right. Well, that was fun from Joel, and we're going to come back to a bunch of that at 7:30, specifically the stuff about being in being right there, stuck in the middle with you, not where you want to be. Sorry. And I don't know, a lot of what he said was making maybe way too much sense. So we'll dig back into that at 7:30. Before we do, we are just 2 days away from opening day, and I got a list of names that have one terrible thing in common. I'll tell you what it is next. Brock and Salk, Sales Sports on 710, salesports.com.